Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, Wisconsin Badger football reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, joined today by Todd Molesky, who covers men's and women's hockey, the UW athletic department, and pretty much everything else around here for
whatever else needs covering.
Exactly. Right. So Todd's making his debut on the revamped Red Zone here. We're getting into the postseason for hockey as well. Jim's on the road right now. He's traveling to Michigan, wrapping up the Badgers basketball season, so we might be able to get him back on before tournament time. But a great time to have Todd in, getting ready for the hockey season or postseasons as well. So we're going to get into all that. We're going to kick off the show talking about Ted Gilmore's departure from the football program, kind of what that means for UW and where they go from here with that wide receiver coach position, kind of the things that led up to that. And then, like I mentioned, want to talk about hockey with Todd here. Men's and women's programs getting ready for the postseason. The women are trying to defend their national championship, and the men are hoping to somehow salvage a less than stellar season. So, and then also because Todd covers this really well for his State Journal, some of the construction plans and things that are going on at UW that are going to impact, you know, the experience that fans have going to games, the south end zone construction for the football stadium, and then some things going on at the Kohl Center as well. So we'll hit on that as well. But wanted to start with Ted Gilmore because this was kind of the news of late last week. For the first time going into this season, UW is going to have the same coaching staff from 2018 and 2019. They had the same staff. And then, of course, it's got to change going into 2020. Can't have that too often. So we learned Wednesday here at the State Journal that it was a possibility and looking like it was going to happen. We're working to confirm it all week going into Friday. And by 11 o'clock, Michigan State tweets out that he was Ted Gilmore is going to Michigan State, going to be their tight ends coach. And, you know, we're still, you know, this is kind of that we take you behind the curtain sometimes talking about the reporting process. We're still waiting to hear back from Ted Gilmore and Michigan State and everything like that. But the exact reasons we're not sure on, we'll have to wait until he puts his side of the story out there. But more than likely a big pay raise. Michigan State has $6 million to work with for their on-field coaches. And from some of the other reports that Michigan State offered, about $1 million to another tight ends coach that they were trying to land from Kentucky. So even if it's, you know, $800,000, $900,000, that's about double the salary that Ted Gilmore is making at UW.
And this is what you get into with a new coaching staff at any college football
right.
program. You're gonna get someone that's gonna ask, hey, how much can we push it here for what we can pay assistants? And so it, you know, Mark D'Antonio goes out, you know, you're going to see some level of change there over at Michigan State. And this is, I guess, a little bit of the extension of that, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty clear just the way that the Mel Tucker thing happened where he said he wasn't going, but then things changed. And then I think a lot of the change was his salary and then the salary
right.
he was going to get for his assistants.
I think it was pretty clear that there was some money issues involved here. And then when that loosened up, oh, okay, well, things can happen.
Right. And like I mentioned, you know, it was a big rarity for a major program like Wisconsin to have one staff roll over to the next with no changes like they had between 2018 and 2019. It was the first time under Paul Chryst that it happened. So the fact that it didn't happen back-to-back years isn't too surprising. But the guy being Ted Gilmore, who is as important to the offense as I would say, you know, a Joe Rudolph, even as the offensive coordinator, just somebody that was very impactful, developing receivers. We saw this year with the talent that the receiver pool had. That was a lot of Ted Gilmore. And you talk to any of those players, they credit a lot of the work ethic they had and a lot of the skills that they developed at Wisconsin to him. So it's a pretty big blow from a recruiting and a development on the team standpoint to lose a guy like Gilmore.
And respected as a coach. I mean, you could sense that from the players and from his fellow coaches, how much when he spoke that carried some weight to it. And that struck me in the preseason last year talking to him that – you know, this is a guy that really can get a message through to players pretty easily.
Right. And, you know, there's some possible reasons. Again, like I mentioned, this is speculation. We're going to wait until Ted Gilmore puts his side of the story out there. But I think it's fair to assume that there might be some frustration with how the offense went going into last season where you have this collection of wide receiver talent that arguably Wisconsin didn't have depth wise or, you know, top level talent we're seeing with, you know, Quintez Cephas in the combine process right now, really turning some heads in the last 48 hours. But I think if you're a receivers coach and the passing game coordinator for Wisconsin, to still struggle sometimes throwing the ball and maybe not trying some of the things that you would want to if you're in the passing mind, I've got to imagine that built up some frustration and you're thinking eventually something's got to change either here or I got to go elsewhere.
I think that's the, the long-term frustration maybe.
Sure.
Here with the program that passing game hasn't, evolved the way people would like it to anyway. I think it's evolved, but it hasn't maybe gone the same path as other programs. That maybe that's the fair way of saying it.
Right.
And yeah, you can imagine why if that's your job, maybe if you don't see that the future happening in the way you would like it to, yeah, maybe it's time to look somewhere else.
And there's a lot of talk about that Gilmore made. Some people are calling it a demotion. Obviously, the titles change when you're going from wide receivers coach and passing game coordinator to tight ends coach. But, I mean, position assistants in the college game are pretty even outside of coordinators. And then it hasn't been announced yet, but I've got to imagine that Michigan State's going to be using him as either a recruiting coordinator or some high-level part of the recruiting for not only to match the salary he's getting, but that's arguably what his biggest strength was.
Right, and he may go in as tight ends, position, but next year might be different. That works that way too in a lot of colleges. I mean, Michigan State did that 2 years ago, right? Where they shuffled up everyone.
Exactly.
Or last season, actually, but they shuffled everyone. They kept the same people mostly, but gave them all different titles, different jobs.
Right. And I mentioned Quintez Cephas. They were super close. That's one of those relationships that is a really cool thing you can watch develop in a college setting. Quintez Cephas and Ted Gilmore were very close when Cephas' father was killed. After his freshman season, Ted Gilmore went to Georgia for the funeral with him and was with him, is very supportive. And then when Cephas went through his trial last year, Gilmore was there with him, as often as he could be. So that relationship was really tight. And Cephas was asked at the combine if he was surprised that Ted Gilmore left Wisconsin. And it was at the end of his media availability. And he said that he wasn't surprised. And he actually ended up getting kind of shuffled away by combine folks.
You really wanted to hear what that next question was going to be, right?
Right. But I think it's one of those things that if anybody knows, Quintez Cephas is going to be the ones that knows maybe some of those frustrations that he had or things that Ted Gilmore is going through here at Wisconsin. So I think it's a tough situation, like I mentioned, because of the quality of coach and recruiter that he is. But I think it was something that was going to happen eventually. And it stinks when you're looking at it as a Wisconsin fan that he's going to a rival. But Michigan State's in a pretty tough spot right now. I think it's going to take a little while to worry about Michigan State as a conference contender.
You never know. It seems like one of those things that, yeah, you're going to have to give them like 2 or 3 years to be back where they think they should be. But, hey, stranger things have happened, I guess.
That's true. But looking forward for Wisconsin here, obviously you need a new wide receivers coach. And I would imagine that you're going to reassign that passing game coordinator title to somebody like a John Budmeyer, who's the quarterbacks coach right now. I think that's a natural fit, and he's a guy that's proven in the last few years that he can handle those types of things. The job is already posted on the UW sites and those type of job boards, and it closes on Friday, actually. So the candidates that they've got to have it posted for a certain amount of time legally, but I'm sure they're already starting to talk to candidates back channel and start figuring out a couple of that short list of guys that they want. So I've heard a couple of names, but I don't want to put anything out there right now. The big thing is, though, spring practice starts, I believe, March 10th, or if it's not then, it's pretty close to then. So in a couple of weeks. So my imagination, I would imagine that they are thinking, let's get the candidates down Friday, start interviewing the next week, and hopefully get them here on campus by the time spring practices start.
Yeah, you don't want a job like that open for longer than it legally needs to be.
You want
someone in there and working and the full staff kind of all moving together in the same direction there.
And the big thing, too, is with the amount of turnover that they're going to have a wide receiver this year, losing Cephas to the draft, losing Cruikshank to transferring, and then you lose Gilmore. There needs to be some direction for that group. You've got Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor coming back as the most talented, most experienced guys. But past that, you've really got some big question marks you got to find.
It's an interesting point of reference for where the program is under Paul Christ. Where does it go from here? And where does the passing game go from here, I guess, specifically? Maybe we'll read probably too much into whoever they hire in terms of what direction it goes. But I think that's going to provide a little bit of of maybe not clarity right away, but of a hint of where things might stand in that position anyway.
Sure. And I think we've seen from Paul Chryst that he's going to be open to putting some guys in different positions. You know, Bob Bostad on the defensive side right now after a lifetime of coaching offense. I think the biggest thing that we have to watch is just the level of recruiter that they bring in, because that was a really thing, like I mentioned a few times now, Gilmore was really good at that, especially going into different areas. And maybe I've gotten a couple blowback comments on Twitter about this, that Gilmore wasn't listed on these sites as like the primary recruiter. That's all secondhand information. I mean, you look at these recruits' Twitter, like their actual posts about who visited them and who they talked to. Gilmore was there, you know, 9 times out of 10. He was a very active recruiter for Wisconsin. So I think that's going to be the big thing that Wisconsin goes for is, can you find a guy that can replace that recruiting impact that Ted Gilmore had, and then maybe expand it, maybe just get you in a couple areas that you haven't been in before or haven't had as much success in, bring those connections in. Because that's when you're looking at these position coaches, even more than developing the guys that are on your team, their biggest value, I think, is finding more guys and recruiting for you, you know, in areas that maybe you aren't doing right now.
It's probably a good time for them to reevaluate or reassess where they are recruiting wise, and if they want to change anything, how they can do it, that probably, like you're saying, fits into what they do here, who they get and who they move around to different recruiting spots and things like that.
Yeah, and the nice thing is that this is happening for Wisconsin at a time when there's a ton of momentum with recruiting. You know, they had the best class they've ever had rankings-wise this season, and then they're building a class that's probably going to surpass that next year. So if any time to have a key recruiter leave, this is a good one for Wisconsin to be able to have the momentum going, and it might not be as big of a loss as it might be, you know, in years past for the program.
Time will tell on that.
Yeah, true.
We'll have to see.
Quick combine update. I mentioned we're recording this on Wednesday. You guys are going to hear it Thursday morning. Tyler Biadasz this morning at the combine said that he wasn't going to be participating in drills. He had surgery on his shoulder, AC joint, which is right at like the connection of your collarbone and your shoulder, to fix some things in there. Kind of a wear and tear injury for an interior lineman, especially. Tough one for him because, as I've written on Madison.com earlier this week, his stock has been slipping a little bit in the eyes of NFL scouts, and the not being able to compete in these drills and kind of put up some numbers in that way. I don't know how important they would have been for him had he, you know, run fast or done well in some of these other things, but just adding another quote-unquote red flag and an injury to a guy that's had, you know, a major hip surgery before that and things of that nature, I think we're starting to see some momentum building that he might be a later day two, even a day three pick now, just because some of these things are stacking up on him.
It's, you know, things with the combine, these are decisions that are so calculated. And
right.
So, I mean, and it's even with surgery. I mean, when you have it done, what you know, can it be rehabbed? Is it something that absolutely needs surgery? I mean, that's, you wouldn't think he would have had surgery unless it was something that needed to get done in the position in his career where he is right now.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that, adding that into the mix, you have so many of these decisions of factoring in what can I do, what can I not do, that I don't think there's anything, you know, necessarily hidden going on here. There's no trickery happening with him not participating. This is something that's, you know, he's got to plan for him what's, you know, a little bit of the best path forward here. And yeah, it does kind of, it's unfortunate for him that it works this way, but I don't think he would have chosen it if he didn't have to.
Right. And he did say that he's hoping to be available for OTAs in April. That was, you made a good point there. That was why they scheduled the surgery where they did, was that, you know, maybe he's hurt throughout the combine and the draft process, but then when the real work starts and you're with your team, then hopefully he can be ready to go when those team activities start. But tough break for Biadasz. I'm very interested to see the next, you know, 48 hours where or how fast Jonathan Taylor and Zach Bond run. They did a bunch of their media interviews in the last few days. So it's been cool to see them back in the news and starting to get them around some of the NFL people they need to. But then when they get down the field and be able to show what they can do, I think that's going to be an exciting thing for Badger fans there.
You ever been to a combine? Or
I haven't. I want to, though. I'm looking at it next year, possibly.
Okay. It just seems so weird.
Oh, yeah, sure.
The whole thing I mean, I understand it. I understand why it happens and why, you know, everyone needs to come together at one place instead of having, you know, 30 different, 32, whatever it is, different, you know, places people go, but they're going there anyway sometimes. So,
sure.
It's
a wild process.
Yeah.
But all right, we'll transfer off of football here and jump into men's hockey. Like I mentioned at the top, kind of a lackluster season for this program, especially with the talent that they had coming in. 18-1, going into this last weekend. They got two games left at Ohio State. Todd, you're the expert. You've seen this team pretty much every shift, you know, from starting back in August, basically, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think hasn't been there for this team this season when they come in with some hype and the amount of talent that they had just hasn't panned out the way they wanted?
Yeah. There's been a couple different things that have stood out. And one of them is that they have this level of talent that everyone has seen. And it hasn't necessarily been together on the same page a lot of the time. I mean, so you can have individual talent, but if that doesn't translate to a team, you're still going to have trouble. You can only do so much as an individual in a hockey game.
Right, right.
I think there's been that to play with. There's been this kind of growing frustration of, you know, where this group is headed. And that started, you know, maybe a little bit back in November. They had a really good start to the season. They lost their first game, but then they won three in a row, including two home games against Minnesota Duluth, who's won two national championships in a row. And so at that point, everyone's thinking, okay, this is, you know, turning out maybe the way we thought it would. And then it kind of started to slip away in late October and early November. And things at that point, if they could have turned it around, if they could have gotten some momentum back going in November, I think they'd be okay now.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't. They lost an overtime game to Notre Dame. That one sticks out in my head because they'd won the first game of that series. Notre Dame's a fairly highly ranked team at that point. And they go to overtime with Notre Dame the second night. Cole Caulfield has a chance to score on a breakaway in overtime. It gets saved and rolls kind of towards the goal line and gets stopped right before the goal line. So, you know, inches away from scoring for a sweep that would have put them kind of right back on pace to get things going. The goal doesn't go in. Notre Dame scores like 15 seconds later at the other end. It's a split of the series. You're kind of on the downswing. And it felt like after that, from there to the end of the first half, it was really a struggle for them to get things going. Now, I don't know if that would have changed enough to make this season what necessarily they thought it was,
right,
was going to be coming in. But that one's always stood out in my head as a moment that has really had the potential to change things for the team this year.
Right. I think it's a good point you made. One of those turning points, obviously, you know, in a long season like a hockey season, one game might not change everything, but the momentum you can take from it and everything like that can change things.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the frustration. That's one of the things I want to talk to you about. Like, the talent this team has is so strong, and a lot of these guys have NHL contracts waiting for them once they're done with college. How do you think these guys have handled, you know, a season that just hasn't gone their way and lots of things just aren't what they were hoping for?
Well, you got to remember, there's a lot of young guys on this team, guys that haven't necessarily had this level of frustration over a season,
sure,
at least in a long time. I mean, you've got some 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds who came up through the National Team Development Program, and that's a program that's, by its nature, the best players in the U.S. at their age group. And not to say that that's always a necessarily, again, makes a great team, but it's a great collection of individuals, and they did have a really good team there at that program. So they came up through that, maybe didn't have a whole lot of adversity through that, and they come here and try and fit in with this new group. It's had its ups and its downs, I think.
Sure.
And so I think being able to handle that is something they've learned to do through this season. I think they're better at it now than they were in the first half. The young guys and even some of the older guys, the veterans, they only have three seniors, but they have a pretty big junior class. Those guys that have been around a few years have become better through the season at handling adversity. And that was one of the big questions people mentioned to me, players mentioned to me before the season, is, you know, when I asked them, what's something that you're interested in seeing how it plays out this season. And mm-hmm. one of the things was, well, how we handle the bumps in the road. And, you know, they didn't very well early, and I think they've gotten a little bit better at it this year in the second half, you know, in the 2020 portion of the season. But, you know, they dug themselves a big enough hole that that hasn't really meant a whole lot.
Right. And that's one of those tough things when you – I think hockey is one of the most unique sports just because of length of season. And when you are playing, like you mentioned, since August, mm-hmm. and to only have 32 games, it doesn't seem like a lot, but it's just that every week grind, at, yeah. you know, almost three or four games a weekend type of deal. It's just the mental strain that not playing well, especially or living up to the expectations that you had going into a season, like to prolong it like that. You know, yeah. in football, you know, if things are going bad, well, we're done in November, yep. right, or something like that. But in hockey, you're in it every day. I've got to imagine that kind of wears on them.
Yeah, and the big thing is, you know, what I've heard from people over the years is that, you know, in college especially, in the pros, you have it differently because you play three or four times a week, and, mm-hmm. you know, there's not, you know, the big gap between them. So you're playing one night, you have another practice, you go on the road and you play somewhere else the other night. You don't have a lot of time to sit on you know, bad experiences or get those frustrations going because you have some time. You're out there right again to try and fix it.
Right.
In college, you play Friday and Saturday. You know, most places play Friday and Saturday. Then you're off until the next Friday and Saturday. You have to practice in between. And that's a little bit of a, you know, this is one of the challenges that players have to go through of finding those opportunities to use those practices to get those frustrations out instead of carrying them into that next weekend. And maybe that's something that's been a challenge for them this year too.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. As much as we've talked about the negative sides of it, some good things have happened. I mean, this past weekend's a good example. Arizona State was top 10 ranked.
Yeah, they were number nine
in the country coming in. They came to Madison, got swept. I mean, as you're watching that game, and I was following your Twitter feed. Was it Friday night? Yeah. All the chippiness? Yeah. Okay, it was going
well,
back
Saturday, yeah.
That's Saturday. Okay.
Well, it was Friday was the wild scoring game. And okay. Saturday it got to be where, you know, three Arizona State players got tossed out of the game.
Yeah.
It was a weird weekend that way.
Yeah, so, I mean, as you're watching it, do you think, like, maybe this team's starting to put some things together, or was it just one of those, like, hey, we're almost done, like, put it all together one weekend? What do you think?
I feel like it's been the last couple of weeks, starting, I think, with the Michigan series on the road, they've started to piece it together, and it hadn't translated to two victories in a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
They got swept at Michigan, but they played okay. You know, okay is probably not going to win you a lot of games, but they weren't run out of the building, I didn't think. And then they come home to play Penn State, win the first game. You know, and Penn State's a top 10 team, too. They're going to be in the NCAA tournament. They've got a shot at the Big Ten title this weekend, depending. I mean, they don't play anymore, but they could kind of hold on to it. The Badgers played okay again and a little bit better, I thought, and got away with a victory there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been something that's been building, I think. They just hadn't been able to put the two nights together in a weekend. And even, I mean, you look back at last weekend, they win 7-6 on Friday.
Right.
It's a game that's, you know, 2-2 after one, 4-4 after two. Arizona State takes the lead. The Badgers come back and take the lead. Arizona State ties it, and the Badgers score with a minute and eight or whatever it is left to go ahead. You know, that's not necessarily the kind of game you want to be playing at
yeah.
this time of the year. You want to be more, you know, disciplined in your own zone. And you know, that's a little bit of the other thing that hasn't really gone well this season is that they haven't consistently played well in their own zone. And that's not just a goaltending thing. That's not just a defenseman thing. That's a whole entire six players on the ice. Effort that, or sometimes lack of effort, that's played into that, and so sometimes people are you know pointing at the goalies, pointing at the defensive. No, it's the whole group, and everyone kind of shares in that blame of what's gone wrong in that area.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. You mentioned the Big Ten tournaments coming up. They got. Was it half the league that basically has games this weekend, or half, like it's like
well, it's six
yeah.
of us. There are seven teams, so six of them play this
okay.
weekend. Penn State's off.
Gotcha. Okay, so for the Badgers to make the NCAA tournament, they would need a miracle run in the Big Ten tournament
yeah.
to win.
Yeah, they need. Their at large bids or chances are nil. So
right. So to get to the tournament, they would need to win the Big Ten tournament. What would you put the odds on that? Are just the strength of the Big Ten this season is pretty. I mean, it's pretty high.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I. My first inclination is to say they're very long, the odds. The reason I'd said that before when people have asked is, well, because they hadn't put together a complete weekend in a long, long time. And now after last weekend, well, I can't really say that anymore. You know, Friday they maybe snuck out with that win because it was a kind of a toss-up to the end. But Saturday they played really well. And so you start to think, well, I think this weekend will tell us a lot.
Sure,
they're going to Ohio State, a team that's playing for the Big Ten title. They win the championship with two wins over the Badgers this weekend. They could end up in a tie, but they would get the number one seed. If they're able to come out of this weekend with a win, the Badgers, I think those chances in the playoffs, you know, at least to get through the first round, are going up.
Sure.
Ohio State has not been an easy team for them to beat, especially on the road. They've lost the last four games there, and I think if they scored maybe a combined five or six goals in those four games. So it's if they can go there and get a result, that's, I think, the progress that they need to show going in. It's going to be tough. I mean, this is, you know, you're probably going to have to go through Penn State at some point in the, you know, Penn State's always been a tough matchup for them, especially on the road. And everything's going to be on the road for them in the playoffs because they're finishing in last place. So it's a long, long shot. But, you know, that's why you have to play them. You never know. Someone is going to come up at some point from last place and win a Big Ten championship. And who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows when it'll be.
Hopefully they can figure it out next season for you. I'm sure hockey season, with the amount of travel and the not watching, you know, good hockey, that's got to be rough.
It's, you know, I've told people this, and I do honestly believe it. Any night of covering hockey is better than the alternative for me. So,
fair enough.
Bad hockey is still hockey.
That's fair.
Let's put it that way.
All right, let's switch over to good hockey, talking
sure.
about the women's team.
Yeah.
I mean, 27-4-3, like I mentioned, trying to go back-to-back as national champions. They're gearing up for their WCHA tournament. That starts next week. They're off till then, so they got some nice time off.
They earned the first round bye in the WCHA playoffs.
Yeah, so they've got a nice period of rest here. As you've watched this team this season, obviously, you know, the roster changed a little bit. Just what is it about this team that's maybe reminiscent of last year's team with coming off that national championship?
That's interesting. Yeah, I was asking some players that actually yesterday. And they point to, you know, yes, the pieces are different. They don't have Annie Pankowski, who, you know, could, you know, score a goal whenever they needed one. It seemed like she would find a way. They don't have Emily Clark, a great center who, you know, would be involved in all sorts of, you know, impressive plays and could control things in her own zone too. But they do have players who stepped up to fill a lot of those roles. And you know, one of them, getting Daryl Watts as a transfer from Boston College has, I think, allowed them to stay on the same level in terms of offense.
Sure.
Defensively, it's been a little bit of a struggle lately for them, and I think that's a reason to be a little bit hesitant about where things are going here in these next couple of weeks as they chase the second state title. But you look back at last year, it was a little bit of the same way. They had some defensive struggles, then the postseason started, and they shut it down.
Yeah, they didn't let up a goal in the postseason.
Yeah, right. they got going, and they played a pretty solid three-zone game to shut things down. So I'd like to say that, yes, it has a lot of similarities to last year, just with a little bit more veteran players in some of those roles. You know, getting the second and third defensive pairs, you got some players that have a little bit more experience than they did last year. And I think that can be helpful as they go forward. Players that kind of know, well, they were freshmen last year, they know what to expect this year, they've been through it, and they have a pretty strong group to build on there.
I feel like in hockey more than a lot of sports, like having that experience It's so much invaluable. You can't even assign experience means X amount to somebody just because being on the ice in those pressure moments and learning how to preserve a lead, doing all these types of things. And, you can do it in the regular season, but it changes when you get to those tournament times. And they've proven they can do it last year, a lot of these same players. And then the ones that they've, brought in. You mentioned Darryl Watts. I want to get to her in a second because, this team's got three – player of the year
right.
for the finalists in the awards here, or award circuit. But she's kind of given them that person they can rely on to create offense whenever they need it. And, if it's tied, like, hey, we need to get the lead, or, can you create something to extend this lead for us? She's just kind of become that player that creates offense, like you mentioned.
Yeah, and so they had Darryl Watts with Sophie Shirley and Abby Rock on the top line for a lot of the season. And a few weeks ago, they moved Rock out of the center position on that line, put her on the second line, and brought Brett Pettit up to play with Watts and Shirley. And, it was one of those moves that had a bunch of different reasons why you do it. You want to get, Britta Curl going on the second line a little bit too. You look for a little bit of a different, chemistry between players, and if things aren't working offensively, you can always go back to these three big players, put them together out there, and they know what to do, and they've done that a couple times in games in the last couple of weeks. But so that move to me was an interesting kind of depth move in terms of what you can get out of players. And Watts is a game changer. That's, that is, a pretty obvious thing when she's got 70 some points.
Sure.
And it's just an invaluable, kind of luxury, I think, for the Badgers to have a player like that, come out of nowhere in a lot of ways for them and come out of a transfer situation.
Right, and we're talking about Watts. Sophie Shirley, and Abby Roque are three Patty Kazmaier Award finalists, and that's the Women's National Player of the Year Award. To have three players on the same team, I know there's not as many teams as there are in men's and women's hockey, but still, to have three players from the same team just shows how talented this team is, and then the amount of the stats that they're putting up, that they're getting that recognition.
Yeah, it's... I think it's only happened one other time here at Wisconsin, and Wisconsin being one of these programs that develops players like this and puts them on a really visible platform for people nationally to see.
Sure.
It does say a lot about how it's not like there's a lack of quality players around the country that could fill in on this list. No, these three players have done enough, put up enough points to get noticed. First of all, and then kind of been in situations and performed well in them that have been important to their team. And you put those two things together, and it's definitely worthy of recognition. Then you get into the situation of, people want to know who's deserving of the vote. You look at these three players, are they dependent on each other to be at that in that spot, or is one of them – the one that has to be there for the other two or for the team to have success. And so you can make cases for all of them. I think I would make the case for Watts in being the one that's put them at a level this season where they can be talking about defending their championship. I think they were going to be in the conversation anyway. They're a program that's always there and are able to be in the national tournament, hosting games in the quarterfinals, and giving themselves a chance to get to the Frozen Four. I think Watts has helped put them in the conversation to be a national championship caliber team.
Gotcha. I'm going to put you on the spot again. We know in all sports how tough repeating as a title winner is. What would you put their odds at, or how would you describe their road to get there?
Well, I feel like they've slipped up a little bit in the last few weeks with a couple of losses that took them out of the number one spot in the pairwise rankings. And the pairwise rankings are the model of how the NCAA ranks teams for getting into the tournament one and then for seeding.
Gotcha. Okay.
So they're number two behind Cornell. And so that plays in that instead of having the number eight seed come to Wisconsin for the first round, if you're the number one playing number eight, and the committee has some latitude to change things around depending on travel and things like that, there's a chance that they'll end up getting a Ohio State or Minnesota Duluth coming in to LeBron Arena to play that NCAA quarterfinal. And that's no gimme.
Right,
they've had these last couple of years, it's been not exactly a competitive NCAA quarterfinal game. That would be, I think, a lot tougher of a road for them to go through than getting the automatic qualifier from the CHA, which is one of the Eastern Leagues,
sure.
To come in, a team that wouldn't be in the tournament otherwise,
yeah.
than having won their league championship in the playoffs. That changes things a lot, because not only for that game, but then if you get through that, then you've got another game, 6 days later. Against a really good team,
right.
to play for. And
teams that, the ones you mentioned, they're familiar with.
Right.
They've played multiple times this season. That's not going to be like, they're so much outclassed.
Yeah.
It's a much tighter gap.
I mean, if it's Ohio State coming in here, Ohio State hasn't lost in its last three games at Lebanon Arena, if you want to put it that way. So
yeah.
They won't be coming in here scared of anything or, feeling like they don't have a chance. They're going to come in here thinking they can get to the Frozen Four.
Right.
And in Duluth, the Badgers just played Duluth, and they probably will have to play them again in the WCHA semifinals next week if everything goes according to chalk in the first round of the playoffs. There's some interesting possibilities there, but I do think they have a pretty good chance of getting to the Frozen Four. And when you get there, a lot of times it's a toss up in those
who's
games.
Who's playing the best?
Yeah,
and, yeah,
right. I mean, last year they. They had the motivation of playing Clarkson in the first game in the Frozen Four, because they had lost to them 2 years earlier in the championship game, and there were enough players on the team that remembered that and remembered that they outplayed them in that game, but just didn't get any goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those kind of motivations do play a lot into how things go, and so. We'll see. Otherwise, it's kind of a toss up in when you get to those last couple of games.
Gotcha. All right, let's transfer over into some of the things going around UW. Like I mentioned, Todd mm-hmm. also covers the athletic department and a lot of the construction stuff that they're doing right now. And I want to start with Camp Randall, because Todd did a really good job of pulling together all the renderings that the UW is considering and some of the design plans that they have for the south end zone at Camp Randall, basically making it like luxury seats, like kind of luxury stands, taking off the stands that are kind of bump up against the field house on UW's campus, making more of like a plaza type of area.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that, and I guess the point I want to make to start with is this has gotten good and bad reviews, because a lot of people that have those season tickets and some people that have, sat there for a long time are really upset that mm-hmm. they're going to have to get, moved and then charged more, things of that nature. And then there's the other side of like, well, some of these stands aren't full anyway. Like, let's try to make this a better experience, try to do some different things. What's your take on the idea of just kind of changing the face of some of these areas of Camp Randall?
Well, the interesting thing to me, one of the interesting things is that they're taking the area of the stadium that's been, worked on the most recent. The south end zone was built in 2000. Remember exactly when it was.
Yeah.
It's part of the bigger renovation, and basically blowing it up.
Right.
And so when there are a lot of other spots in the stadium that maybe aren't necessarily comfortable to sit in, we've heard this from a lot of people over the years that it's not exactly the most comfortable experience to watch a game when you've got somebody's knees in your back and you're going upstairs, up and down stairs that aren't wide enough and it doesn't
very
seem
steep
that way.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's steep. But they say that they have a long waiting list for premium seating, and premium seating meaning anything from club seats all the way up to suites.
Sure.
And they have this limited amount that they've already sold, and they inside the east side construction from 2004. I always get turned around in what direction is what over there, and so there's they want to find other locations to basically charge people more to see the game. So they're taking all these seating. It'll be, there'll be less seating. The capacity will be down at Camp Randall, but they'll be able to charge more for these seats. So in the end for them, it's a net gain in terms of revenue. So, they'll have some regular seats, some loge seats, what they call them. They have some clubs, I think two levels of clubs, plus a terrace up at the top, what right. they're doing for the south end zone work at Camp Randall. So that's I'll be interested to see what comes next after this, though. How far down the road are they looking in terms of what they can do for, you know, the 50-yard line, you know, sure. between the 30s kind of seating that a lot of people have right now and a lot of people would like to see improved. You know, Camp Randall's not getting any younger.
Nope.
It's
and when you have an old building to begin with, trying to do things to it, it adds complications to it.
It's really tough. And, you know, so they've looked into some things. They had a master plan a few years ago that looked into all sorts of different options of, you know, gutting the west side stands and rebuilding some of that and then the upper deck, changing things around there. But those are very costly projects. This one is not cheap, but compared to that, it's something that they thought they could get done.
Sure.
Now
and it can almost pay for itself with the increased price.
Yeah,
and
then at some point it'll get to that. But you know they have the money to do it. They've been saving, you know, gift funds for years now, and they've chosen this to be the time to go forward with that.
Gotcha. And they're doing something similar at the Kohl Center. They're moving around some things. This isn't going to affect the fans' perspective right. as much. Changing some things down low to add like a lounge and a premium ticket center. And I think the thing that I want to get to, and I want to hear your opinion on it, Todd, is I don't understand, instead of maybe doing these things after – let me back up. Why don't they just sell beer? Like, I don't understand the administration's like – just hard and fast rule, like so far at least, that they don't want to sell beer at games.
Yeah.
And to me, one, it would just pay for some of these things that you want to do. And I just think it would improve the experience that people want, because we're seeing – I mean, basketball is getting killed about it right now. The students aren't coming. The football, they've always had that longstanding, like, oh, they don't show up till the second quarter, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. I mean, just sell beer in the stadium. It's working around the country. We just saw Illinois this year, which didn't draw nearly as many people.
Right.
Got $400,000 of revenue. They were over their projections.
Yep.
I mean, these are types of things where it's like, if you're so worried about costs and doing all these things, like, give yourself this opportunity to make some money that doesn't I don't see the downside.
Right. And I wrote about this subject last summer when Illinois was you know doing this, mm-hmm. and one of their administrators told me that I was not in favor of this a couple of years ago, until because they had experience when the Bears played there,
yep.
When Soldier Field was getting renovated.
Don't do a game then.
No, yeah. Right. So they had experiences there that people were so turned off by the experience of having beer sold there and what they saw in the stands and just you know interactions with other people that they got. You know, so many negative reactions from that they didn't want to do it. But when it came up again as a possibility, and you know, you're talking about revenue, you're talking about
declining funds coming from the state, like these projects are getting harder and harder to fund.
Right. You're talking about, you know, just getting people instead of sitting out in the parking lot and drinking beer and listening to the game on the radio or watching it on their computer or TV or whatever they bring, getting into the stadium.
Right.
That's a pretty important factor and a pretty motivating factor for a lot of teams. You know, we've been kept track of it for years that the number of people in the stadium goes down and down and down. Mm-hmm. You know, not necessarily every year it goes down, but I think over the course of time, it's the number of people that choose to not use their tickets is sometimes kind of stunning.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have a quarter of the number of tickets out there that are just not used. A lot of reasons can go into that, obviously. Is it weather? Is it, you know, you don't want the travel? You don't want the hassle of all
that? Yeah, fight getting downtown, yeah.
Yeah. But why not give people another reason to come in to do it? You know, here at UW, you know, it's up to the chancellor. The chancellor has that decision to make, and so far the chancellors that they've had here have said, no, we're not going to do that. It'll be... To me, it'll be interesting to see, you know, when they become one of the minority of Big Ten schools that doesn't. I think it's 7-7 right now, yep. Or maybe 8-7, 8-6. I'm not exactly sure. When they're becoming part of even the smaller minority than they are right now of schools that don't serve beer, how they continue to explain that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, everyone knows that there's a changing fan landscape and marketplace in all sports. You've got to get people into the building. And it's getting tougher and tougher to do as TVs get better and better and couches are nicer
and beer's cheaper
at home. And, but yeah, you've got to have that experience that that brings people in. So I'm really interested to follow that in the next couple of years.
This is why I wanted to bring Todd on, everyone, because he just dropped knowledge on you for like 30 straight minutes. But all right, so as we're wrapping up here, make sure you're following Todd's work on Madison.com. He had a really great story about the men's senior goalie, Jack Barry. Great display of leadership, giving up his senior day start to one of his teammates that doesn't get to play, you know, pretty much ever.
But yeah.
Make sure you go on Madison.com and read that story. Really good one.
Thanks.
And then I'll be updating our combine and draft collection that's on Madison.com right now with all of their workouts. I just put up all their measurements today. So if you wonder how big Zach Bond's hand is, you can go on there and find out. But once they start running and everything like that, I'll put that on there as well. And then Jason Wilde is actually down there. Our Packers guy is down there writing about some of the Wisconsin guys that talked today. So lots of stuff on Madison.com for you to read. But thank you so much for joining us, Todd. We will be back next week. We'll see who's going to be around. Might be a busy week for everybody with the postseason starting. But thank you very much for listening.